Welcome to Breaking Free Authentically, the podcast where we explore what redefining relationships looks like through a sex-positive lens. Let's kick shame and guilt to the curb and really start living a sexy, authentic life. I'm passionate about normalizing out-of-the-box ways of designing relationships. There's nothing quite like finding your tribe and experiencing the freedom of being completely yourself without judgment. I'm your host, Corinne Bedard, your sex-positive relationship designer, and I'm here to guide you in creating the relationship you desire, whether that is a more open one or simply a more empowered one. Join me every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to enjoy the newest episode. Welcome back to Breaking Free Authentically. We are on episode 75, and this week is going to be a very cool conversation. We haven't really talked about this, but we are talking about breaking the cycle of sexual avoidance. And I know a lot of you have heard about sexless marriages and how when you're in a relationship for a long time, a lot of people struggle with keeping their sexual energy up. It just kind of sometimes falls to the wayside. And I don't want that for you, because there's so many things that we really can do to invigorate our sex lives. But again, we're not taught how to do this. Because there's so much shame about sexuality, we don't talk about it. It's not taught. And so I am really wanting to bring awareness to all kinds of areas of our sexuality and having actual real discussions, open discussions, without shame and guilt. We just talk about it. It's not a big deal. So today my guest is Katie Ziskin, and she specializes in coaching disconnected couples who want to stay together and want to work together after high conflict fights, anger issues, affairs, sexual avoidance, and sexual rejection to develop a foundation of emotional connection, trust, and love. She supports couples who struggle with infidelity and need an affair recovery specialist that takes them through specific steps to attune to each other. Intimacy is all about being emotionally vulnerable to build a closer relationship. We don't learn emotional expression skills growing up. She says, "I help couples grow together through life transitions and stressors like infertility, becoming new parents, having a child with special needs, loss and grief, dealing with chronic pain, alcoholism, becoming empty nesters, and do so while reducing criticism, hurt, and conflict. I help couples feel safe and excited emotionally and build a strong bond and grow together. I help couples gain sex-positive skills to understand foreplay, sexual pleasure, rebuild sexual desire, connect to their sexual, erotic, playful side. I give you a safe place to talk about how your strict, conservative, religious upbringing has led to feelings of shame, guilt, fear, avoidance, lack of satisfaction, and anxiety around sex, and shift into reconnecting to sexual pleasure. I help couples get familiar and comfortable talking about emotions, needs, expectations emotionally, and gain sex-positive education. I have a podcast available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify called All Things Love and Intimacy." She is a Gottman Level 2 trained, certified sex therapy informed professional and couples specialist. So I'm excited to have this conversation with you today, because you know I talk about creating safety in relationships and how important that is. And today we recognize just how important that is when we are trying to keep our erotic sex life in play. We have to have a level of safety and connection. And this is a theme that I talk about, to have empowered relationships. And we all want empowered relationships. So I hope you enjoy this episode today. I want to apologize for my publishing schedule. It's been off. I've been really working hard on releasing a new course, and it's called the Open Relationship Roadmap, The Secrets to Success. And I'm so excited about it, but I've been working night and day to try to finish this so I can release it to you guys, because I know it's going to help so many people. And like I said, we're not taught a lot of this stuff as we grow up. And I want to make things easy for you. I want you to not have to guess anymore. And I want you to know what the clear path is to have successful ethical non-monogamy, if that's the choice that you make. If you don't choose ENM, that's okay too, because all of these steps on the roadmap only lead to an amazing relationship. Because you have to have an empowered relationship. You have to have a strong foundation in order to be successful in ethical non-monogamy. And that's what this course talks about. And so after this course, you will not have any questions as to what you need to work through, what you need help with, and you'll be able to be sure of your decisions and where you want to go next. So I just wanted to kind of throw that out there, because I have not been keeping up with my schedule, my release schedule for the podcast. And so it's kind of all over the place. So I apologize for that. But I thank you so much for your patience and for your understanding. It's a lot of things I'm trying to juggle, and I want to really deliver some amazing things. And so I'm just giving you a chance to catch up on episodes you haven't listened to yet. Anyways, I'm excited to have this conversation. So when we come back, I will be talking with Katie. See you soon. Please visit our website at www.breakingfreeauthentically.com and subscribe to our mailing list so you never miss an episode. Be sure to leave a review on Podchaser by clicking the link at the top of the page. That would mean the world to me. Finally, I'd love for you to join Breaking Free Authentically, our private sex-positive relationship community on Facebook. All the links will be posted in the show notes. Enjoy the show. Do you feel like you've been sold a fairy tale when it comes to sex and love? Why isn't it working? Why am I not fulfilled or satisfied? Why do I have a deep longing for more? Maybe you've had some of these thoughts. Did you know it's not your fault? That's right. You've been brainwashed since childhood with disempowering beliefs about sex and relationships. This is known as the mono mindset. If you're tired of feeling stuck, you're ready for Breaking Free from Conformity, the 8-week program where you will learn how the mono mindset has set you up for failure in relationships, why you think of sex as wrong or taboo, why you judge yourself. You will finally learn how to have empowered relationships with confidence and success. Many of my clients have said, "Kareen, I didn't know I had choices. I thought I needed a partner to feel complete. I thought I was supposed to suppress my desires to have a successful relationship." Well, what if you could learn to love yourself and your desires without guilt? Well, you can. With Breaking Free from Conformity, the 8-week program, shifting the subconscious programming that is keeping you stuck. It's not your fault. You weren't given a choice. It's time to break free and start living your life. To register, go to offers.kareenbedard.com/BFFC for Breaking Free from Conformity. I can't wait for you to find ultimate freedom and create an empowered relationship for yourself. Welcome back to Breaking Free Authentically. Today, my guest is Katie Ziskind. Katie, welcome. I am so happy you're here and that we finally gotten to connect.
Yes, I'm so excited to be here too.
Yay. And I love your hair, by the way. It's such a beautiful color of, was it aqua blue of sorts?
Yeah.
I love it. It's one of my favorite blue colors. So there you go.
Thank you.
Katie, can you tell us a little bit about you and what you do? Because we're going to have a fascinating conversation today. I already know we've had a great 45-minute conversation already.
I know.
It's been very exciting. So let's find out a little bit more about you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a couples, sex, and intimacy relationship coach. So I specialize with couples, often couples who are in a long-term connection. So couples who are monogamous or polyamorous, it doesn't matter the relationship structure, but that you've been together and now there's something going on intimacy-wise that doesn't feel so good. Mm. So I work a lot with couples who've been through trauma, loss, and grief, and that really impacts what's going on in the bedroom. I'm a certified sex therapy informed professional. I'm a Gottman Level 2 marriage specialist. I use emotionally focused methods. So a lot of times when I work with couples, they're stuck in a cycle of sexual rejection, sexual avoidance, frustration, and feel really lonely. The sexual desire is not feeling so great. There is this piece missing. Mm-hmm. So maybe couples are great at parenting together or awesome at running a business, but the sexual and emotional intimacy elements are really lacking, leaving them feeling unwanted, lonely, unappreciated, and insecure in their bond together.
Mm. That's so great. I think we are programmed in our society to think that emotional and sexual intimacy are just going to continue past the honeymoon stage, mm-hmm. just automatically. And we're disappointed when we realize this happily ever after doesn't continue and mm-hmm. we don't know what to do. And then we think that there's something wrong with us. We think there's something wrong with our partner. We think we made the wrong choice. Mm-hmm. But in reality, would you agree that comfort and eroticism don't really live in the same place?
It is really interesting. You know, like I think there is this piece of needing to feel safe emotionally in order to have eroticism, even have a garden bed to grow in. Mm-hmm. So if eroticism and sexual desire and sexual arousal are like the plants in the garden, you know, emotional security, emotional reassurance, comfort, bonding, commitment, trust, that's the soil. Mm-hmm. And that care, that respect, that essentially a form of love in an emotional way, emotional vulnerability is the soil. And then that's how sexual pleasure and, you know, sexual safety, sexual erotic energy, that erotic embodiment can then grow from that foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we don't learn how to develop emotional expression skills or emotional vulnerability because we grow up in environments where we have a parent who is an alcoholic or a parent who is emotionally neglectful or in some cases really guilt trips us and gives praise in a conditional way. So we're always walking on eggshells. So we have these caregivers that essentially use criticism or, you know, really treat us in ways that, you know, normalize stuffing emotions away. And we never learn how to be emotionally expressive. You know, we go into fight, flight, freeze or survival modes growing up. And living in an environment that's emotionally unsafe teaches a child to put those emotions on the back burner. So then we're in a long-term relationship in adulthood. And we don't realize, like, okay, emotional intimacy is actually a really important ingredient for connection.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's true. And I think that we hear the word like avoidance when it comes to like, you know, attachment styles and stuff, like emotional avoidance, people avoiding their emotions and avoiding getting too close to people. And then we hear about anxious attachment styles where people get really afraid of abandonment and mm-hmm. and they've been left or disappointed by people so often, especially like probably a parent or someone mm-hmm. important to them in their childhood, which set the tone for this fear, not being able to trust that someone's going to be there. But then the other side of the coin is the avoidant people where they felt like they were too much or that mm-hmm. they couldn't rely on someone for their emotional safety. And so they could just rely on themselves. And so mm-hmm. there's no need, like they're not going to put themselves in a position where they have to rely on someone. Mm-hmm. And so then they become these dismissive avoidance is often what we call them. But it's easy to just kind of label someone and be like, oh, they're an avoidant or they're anxious or whatever. But there's so much more to it than that. But furthermore, these dynamics, if you're not aware, if you're not looking at them, can really lead to something you said was like sexual avoidance. And I love that you use that term. And so I really want to unpack that a little bit today. And I want to talk about, like, you know, we said we could talk about like breaking this cycle of sexual avoidance. And what is sexual avoidance? What does that look like? And how in the world do we break that cycle? Because I think there's so many people that are stuck in a cycle where they're not having sex because they say, you know, marriage is the best way to kill your sex life.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is an element of when couples are married, they're sharing more of those hats.
Yeah.
So you may be sharing raising children together, sharing caring for aging parents, sharing relationships with in-laws, sharing the bills. If you own a home, you're paying the mortgage, you're sharing going grocery shopping, sharing doing the dishes and the laundry. There's a lot more in terms of household responsibilities and caregiving roles that are shared that can take away sometimes from our energetic reserves mm-hmm. and can add stress and chaos. So, you know, part of breaking that cycle of sexual avoidance is the emotional communication of, hey, like, you know, I'm going to get this task. There are some managerial elements to it, but also knowing that, you know, we do have these, to break it down in a very basic way, we have two elements to a marriage, right? We have the companionship element, which is like, we're best friends. We do really well financially together. We're paying our mortgage well together. We're aligned in that way. And I can make the kids lunches and I'll pick them up from daycare. So there might be like a strong companionship element, but then in the erotic desire piece, part two is that erotic energy. It's like completely non-existent. Mm-hmm. So we sometimes forget how to shift into building arousal, what it feels like to even be desired, or, you know, what it's like to see our partner as attractive, as a sexy human versus like as our co-parent.
And I think, like, again, we're taught that this should just happen naturally if you're right for each other.
Yes, there's a lot of pressure for it to look like a Facebook or Instagram snapshot. And, you know,
or the movies, can't compare ourselves. Right?
Yeah, or a Hollywood movie, which is fantasy, or a pornography video, which is fantasy. Like, all of those things are unrealistic. So we do have to kind of break down some of those unrealistic expectations. Like, what you see in a Hollywood movie, that's a paid actor and a paid actress putting on a scene, getting paid to portray, you know, something. And then we can't look up to that as love, you know. Marriage, like truly being married, is having an emotionally vulnerable conversation, is grieving together, is crying together, is looking your partner in the eye and noticing when they might be saying I'm fine, but they're really not fine emotionally, and being so attuned and in sync that you can say, hey, like, I care so deeply about you and your heart energy and your emotional state, and I want to make what's important to you important to me.
Yeah.
And being so emotionally available to do that, that is marriage. And we don't see that in Hollywood movie.
No, we don't.
You know, and likewise in porn, pornography is very penis, hard penis focused and penetrative sex focused. And we don't see adequate foreplay. We don't see emotional communication. We don't see people being human beings and that necessary element of emotional vulnerability and emotional expression in pornography. And so a lot of times we think like, okay, good sex is what I see in pornography, and it's really not.
Right.
Being a good lover, being a good partner goes so much beyond the physical act of any sexual activity or movement. And I think too with pornography, like, foreplay is something we don't see, and vulva owners or females do need 45 to 90 minutes at a minimum of foreplay, you know, before even, if penetrative sex is on the table, before even that's considered, you know, before anything like that. And whereas penis owners or males only need 4 to 8 minutes of foreplay to reach peak sexual arousal. And so a lot of times if, you know, a male partner is watching porn, or even if a, you know, females watching porn, we have these expectations for a female, my body should respond in 8 minutes. And it's not true. And sex can be really painful if that there's not enough foreplay, and emotional foreplay, you know, is not shown in porn either. as well as sexual foreplay.
Yeah, no, that's so true. And I mean, coincidentally, I don't like porn because of that, but I enjoy porn when it's kind of more natural and you feel like there's like a romantic sort of connection between the couples and they're like emotionally connected first. That's the kind that I enjoy. It's like, oh, but that's probably why a romantic movie works better for me for foreplay than porn, because porn, I'm like, I think with porn, I feel so much pressure to like be ready to go. And I think that it's kind of built in. I think men who tend to watch porn have this assumption that women, that something's wrong with them and what they're doing if women aren't ready to go right away, you know, or desirous of it right away. Can we talk about responsive desire as opposed to, I don't know, what's the other word? It's leaving me right now, but responsive as opposed to
spontaneous desire.
Spontaneous. Yeah. That's the word.
Yeah. So this, this is a beautiful conversation. So a vulva owner or a female takes 45 to 90 minutes minimum to have clitoral engorgement, which means the blood flow goes to the clitoral and vulva area. Her female genitalia begins to throb, begins to feel a heat, vaginal wetness increases. Takes 45 to 90 minutes for that to happen. So a female typically has more responsive desire, meaning she's responding to feeling safe. Her nervous system, if we go back to being a cave person, we're not going to want to have sex if we're being chased by a woolly mammoth. Like our blood's going to our pupils, we are running away. And that same fight, flight, freeze response gets triggered when there's conflict, when she checks her work email, when a dirty diaper needs to be changed. All these small things are triggering that fight, flight, freeze response. And so desire, precursor to desire for females is relaxation. So creating an environment, especially for the mind, using mindfulness, you're laying on the couch, you're relaxing, there's massage, there's gentle caressing, you know, we're also maybe talking about more sexually arousing things versus like talking about something more parenting oriented, right? We're getting the mind involved. But the females and vulva owners tend to have more responsive desire. They're responding to the touch, the grazing touch on their belly or their arm, or feeling hair being tucked behind their ear. And that is relaxing, which then desire responds to that. Whereas a penis owner or a male takes about 4 to 8 minutes to become from completely flaccid, no circulation in the penis, to biologically blood flow moves to the penis and an erection occurs and there's peak arousal for then an orgasm to happen. And females, once reaching peak arousal and having one orgasm, can have multiple orgasms. There's a shorter refractory period, whereas a male, 4 to 8 minutes, the ejaculation occurs, there's usually a level of tiredness. So, you know, males are definitely more of a creature, which does help our, you know, our society reproduce, but they're more of a responsive, spontaneous desire. So they're a visual creature. They, you know, might look at a partner and say, wow, like my partner is so incredibly attractive, and start to feel mildly aroused. Or let's say, you know, you're out and, you know, a male's partner sits on their lap, like fully clothed. We're just like in a park somewhere. We're just like sitting, relaxing. That male may become mildly aroused. And that's okay. That can actually be a resource for building desire in, you know, a partner that may be more responsive. Mm-hmm. But it is really important to know that, you know, a lot of times when I work with couples, I ask like what your last sexual experience was like, how long was it? Like, do you start with kissing? Like, how's it start? How's it end? And a lot of times when sex is painful for a female, it's because foreplay is not long enough or adequate. So we offer some education on that. Like, it's 1 minute of making out and then we go to penetrative sex and it's dull, boring, an obligation, feels like another thing on the to-do list. She doesn't have any desire to do it again. And sexual avoidance cycles kick in. Why would we do something that's not fun? would we really do it more of anything that feels like another obligation? So we really have to work on increasing pleasure. And pleasure doesn't have to be penetrative sex. Like, pleasure can be holding hands. It can be taking a bath together. It can be just talking vulnerably, right? Pleasure can be having a nipple orgasm, right? Like, it doesn't have to just be a certain way. It doesn't have to end a certain way. So we look at what pleasure is to each person, and especially for a female partner, increasing that to break some of that cycle of avoidance.
Oh, I love that. I love that you're talking about this idea of foreplay. I think, like, again, we're not taught about foreplay. I remember the concept of, like, women are like ovens and men are like microwaves growing up. And I just always kind of knew that. But I don't think a lot of people realize that women, 45 to 90 minutes of foreplay, like, that seems excruciatingly long to a man who's aroused and wants to just have sex. So what would you say to help with that? Because I would imagine that for a lot of men, that feeling of frustration becomes personal. If there's a slight bit of, like, I am not enough, or I'm not good enough, or I'm not attractive enough, that because she should be turned on, because I'm turned on when I see her. And she wouldn't be avoiding me if, you know, or they think, why are you always talking about what feels good to you? And we're not talking about what feels good to me, or things like that, or the imbalance. And why is the conversation always about this? And I feel like a failure. And I've had this happen to me several times, because I'm very aware of my body, and I'm frustrated that I don't get turned on faster sometimes, and I want to have a lovely time, but then sometimes I feel bad asking for what I need, because I guess there's this fear of, like, it being too much, asking for too much, or being a disappointment, because some people don't understand, like, a lot of penis owners don't understand that need for us as women. You know, they're like, oh, you're wet or whatever. Well, I might be wet, but I'm like, if you go too quickly, I'm going to be so engorged. It's painful, because it's not slowly engorging, and it just feels like a flood, you know? And now it's just like a balloon that's blown up really fast and it wants to pop. It's pressure. It hurts. But if it's like a gradual build, then holy moly, get out of the way. You want to do all this kink stuff? I will be totally on board if you give me that. Like, this morning, for instance, I had a 45-minute massage at least, and just all of that gave myself time with candles and, like, music, and gave my body time to warm up and be there. And I mean, I had multiple orgasms and I wanted to keep going, you know?
Yeah.
And that's because I was just able to connect to my body, and I didn't feel any pressure that it needed to move past that. And so two things, how do we address men that are feeling like that's boring, or that's long, or I don't know what to do, and I feel like I'm not enough? And then what do we do with, what do we say to the women who feel like that's too much to ask? Maybe we don't have enough time for that, or I don't know how to get out of my head because now I'm worried that they're going to feel frustrated waiting for me or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, I love this. I love this. So I think one is education. Like, we're normalizing, like, biologically, like, we need 45 to 90 minutes of foreplay. And pornography doesn't show this. So if anyone is watching porn, we're going to be given misinformation. Porn is not education. Porn can be supporting your sexual fantasies and a form of getting your mind involved. And, like, you know, porn that's more female pleasure centered can encourage a female to get in a sexual headspace. But a lot of porn is, like, male centered, which means it's, you know, a 8 to 15 minute video, which there's not enough, there's not barely even any arousal for a female in that. So understanding, like, if you're watching a lot of porn, if porn is, like, even 30% of what you're getting, like, know that that is not going to be applicable in a real life scenario. So maybe not watching as much porn, maybe talking with your partner and being like, what turns you on? Sometimes too, we don't even have a chance to understand our own body. So self-pleasure can be really helpful. Mm-hmm. Right? Self-pleasure can just be looking in the mirror and telling yourself, hey, I deserve to relax. I deserve to feel pleasure. It's okay for me to be a sexually aroused being. Sometimes we grow up with shame and guilt around our sex life. We grow up with shame and guilt around our body size, our body shape. You know, we're constantly being told by society and advertisements to change our body size. So like being able to say like, I deserve to experience pleasure, whether that's feeling the grazing touch of my partner massaging my back or putting lotion or oil on my body after a shower, like talking to yourself and letting you know yourself know what you deserve. I also think too, like exploring the erogenous zone. So like within that 45 to 90 minute period, understanding like the skin is a landscape, a beautiful landscape. Mm-hmm. And so often we like jump right to genital touch and it's like the other areas are so important. Like, you know, like the hands, the fingertips, the inner wrists. I loved your example of the massage, massaging the calves, the inner legs, the hamstrings, the butt, the neck, the ears, the earlobes, the scalp, like the hairline, like the feet, hairline, the belly, the low back, the breasts, the nipples, like every single part of your partner's body needs to be touched before you're touching their genital area. Like build desire. So like for a female, feeling wanted, feeling desired, building anticipation, bringing novelty, bringing romance, right? That's so important. So, and you can also talk about sex. Like foreplay can be before you're even physically together. Like you might be texting and taking on different roles in an imaginary, sexy, playful scenario, which you're texting about, which may or may not happen in real life, but you can go to a fantasy location. You can involve different sexual people. You can role play your partner's fantasies, you know, boss and employee or power dynamics, or things you may not try in real life or may want to try. You can talk to your partner and say, what would make sex better for you? What turns you on the most in foreplay? Have you felt a need to hold back sexually in any way? And for what reason? You know, what allows you to feel your sexual desire increase or accelerate? You know, is there a certain area of your body that is a hot spot for you that you specifically love me touching with my fingers or using my mouth on or using a sex toy on? Or is there a fabric? Is there a material that your skin really enjoys? Is there a type of lighting? Is there a certain room or environment? Like some people love like I don't know, like an airport bathroom, right? Like a family restroom. There is suspense. Like, you know, there you can all go in the stall. It's like a, you know, no one knows you're in there, but there's suspense in that. There's mystery in that. Some people love like a hotel bed where it's a new environment. Some people love, you know, their backyard or their couch. Like there can be an environmental element. You know, is there something you love that I do that you want me to do more of? Right. So sometimes if something's uncomfortable, like telling your partner, I'd rather you do more of this other thing can be really good feedback. You know, do you want to go to a sex shop? Do you want to go to a sex club? Like, is there something that you want to do next? Like, how can we expand and evolve our sexual erotic connection? Right. So like same thing with food, right? Like you might really like a certain type of food. So then you go to a restaurant that specializes in that, or you buy like, you know, some type of culinary thing for your house. You upgrade your to a KitchenAid from a hand mixer. You get really invested in building out your culinary skills and you have a conversation around, oh, this food's so good, or we need to cook it differently this time, or overcooked that. Like, let's do this differently. You know, so the same is true about your erotic self. We're always growing. We all want to be seen as a sexual being. And, you know, being able to talk about, you know, what helps you feel satisfied. And ideally, like a partner, a male partner is not sitting there saying, oh, I'm so bored for 45 minutes. He's so engaged, feeling pleasure from her getting excited. So like there's this natural excitement, like, wow, like my fingertips can do that to her breathing. Like there is a in tune excitement from seeing a partner become more satisfied and excited, that then there is this positive feedback loop. Mm-hmm. Or talking about emotions and building emotional security and figuring out what reassures you both and helps you feel closer, mm-hmm. is a positive feedback loop. So, you know, really being able to go into those places and build emotional security as well as these kind of sexual elements.
Mm. That's great. What would you say to someone who is struggling hearing the feedback?
So like the, like being like 45 to 90 minutes is a long time, or yeah, like,
I feel like I'm doing those things. Why aren't you responding? And I think sometimes it there's some shame involved there. Like, yeah. Or they're feeling like they're scared to not get it right. Or, you know, I feel like if a woman, if partners have been not engaging in sexuality for a while, and she's out of her erotic body and she's not tuned in, it is really difficult for the man to know the man, the penis owner, whoever the partner is, to get in that place where she's now connected to her body. And I find that, like, I have ADHD and my brain is like a freaking race car. Yeah. And it's always like thinking of things, or I'm always like, oh, this technique. And it's like, you don't want to be teaching while you're having sex. You don't want to like be correcting everything. And so there's this piece of like, how do we enjoy the moment on both sides, doing something we're uncomfortable with, you know, because there's going to be a level of discomfort for each person when you're trying out these new things, because you're not sure they're going to work. Like, you don't quite believe that yet. You're like, this might be a complete waste of time, you know, and there could be like a lot of critical language, making the person trying to do the foreplay feel like they're inadequate.
Yes. So I think this kind of comes to the emotional piece of, you know, so say you're saying someone who's like giving foreplay or maybe in a more giving place at that moment to a partner that may be responding in a critical way, being like, oh, don't do that, or I don't like that. Or So we back it up a little bit. So that to me would be a need for emotional intimacy. We might be moving a little bit too quickly in terms of the sexual piece, because talking about emotions and being vulnerable is really the first piece. Mm-hmm. And so intimacy is like, into me, you see. So intimacy is like letting someone in, telling your partner your deepest fears, your deepest insecurities, your deepest worries. So that person would probably say, hey, I just wanted to tell you, like, one of my fears is that, you know, I'm going to touch your body and you're going to push my hand away. And I wanted to tell you that. So when we go into the next time I'm touching you, that maybe instead of you pushing my hand away, you could hold my hand and just kiss my hand and let me know you need a pause or use your safe word. Let me know what you need in that moment, because more than anything, I want to please you, but I want to know what you like. And I also want to feel safe being able to support you, because that is very common, right? Like, one person initiates sex continuously. The other person pushes them away, rejects them, makes them feel lonely and unwanted. Mm-hmm. And then that person stops initiating and the other person never initiates. So now we have a sexless connection.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so we're afraid of rejection. We're afraid of doing it wrong. We're afraid of being an inadequate partner. Maybe a partner's like lost their erection, and that fear of performance anxiety and that fear of losing the erection again keeps them from engaging sexually. So There are a lot of things that come up, but being able to talk with your partner about also what you appreciate about them, what you love about them, because those can be emotional resources. And starting really small, saying to your partner, like, you know, I really want to be able to come to you for a hug. And I really need to be able to know, like, deep down, I really need to know that you're going to want to hug me back.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And like those bids for.
Mm-hmm, yeah. The bids for affection and connection, yeah. That Gottman talk about. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Knowing what a bid is, identifying it, receiving the bid, mm-hmm. making it matter. Right. And a lot of times we are not taught any of this.
Well, let's just talk about that a little bit, because I think there are a lot of people, I haven't talked a lot about bids, but I think like one of the hugest difference between my ex-husband and my partner now is that my partner now, we see each other's bids and we respond to them regularly. And it's like, that has made such a difference in the safety and connection in our relationship, yes. right? Like, we might not always see eye to eye on everything, but I always feel safe because I know that when I go and I shrug or I need a hug, or if I, you know, act a little bit like a little, if I act like a child, I know he takes on his daddy role and he'll put his arms around me and make sure I'm okay. Did you eat? Did you this? You know, and I know that I can ask for things without having to ask for them, because he understands my bids for connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe because some of our bids are very similar, that's probably why. Whereas with my ex-husband, like, I feel like he missed probably 90% of my bids and would answer just so logically to things and not see those things as a bid. And I just felt so lonely, right?
It's so painful, yeah. It's so painful to be in a relationship like that.
Yeah. And it doesn't make them bad. It's just like, I think we mistake. I remember one episode like with the Gottmans, and they were just talking about how someone was like standing at the window and looking at the bird and talking about the bird. And it could have gone two ways. It could have gone like, oh, that's nice. I'm not interested in birds. You know, I don't really care about birds. Or
not accepting a bid. That would be the not.
Right. But that's like not understanding bids, not understanding that that's what that's about.
Right.
Because if she enjoys birds and he doesn't, she could just enjoy it herself. But when she's like, oh, come see this bird. It's so beautiful. This, you know, da, da, da. For him to just dismiss it is not accepting the bid, whereas her bid is for connection. She wanted him to come and stand with her and enjoy this thing that she's enjoying with her. And that makes her feel connected and safe.
Yes.
And
yes.
That is part of sex.
Yes, it is.
That's part of foreplay. Yes,
it is. It very much is.
I think that that's important to remember, is little things like, oh, can you just scratch my back right here? You know, like you could go rub it against a wall if right. you really wanted to. But if you're asking your partner, oh, can you just scratch my back? They want to be touched in some way. They want to have you be a part of that, of them. They desire some sort of connection. And if you ignore them and be like, I don't want to scratch your back, I'm busy right now or whatever, then like, I feel the devastation. I can see it in your face. You're like,
I know. I'm like, no, that's so sad. Just do it. Just
you're like, why is that sad? But those who are more avoidant
don't even know their partner feels sad.
No, they don't.
They don't even recognize it. That. Yeah, so.
And they're often not making bids.
Right.
Either sexually or for connection or intimacy.
Right. They're just, they're very high, very independent. Tend to be more independent.
Scary. You said the word, you know, intimacy is into me, you see.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing more scary for an avoidant, a dismissive avoidant, particularly to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
Because a dismissive avoidant often seems like they're very confident and in control and powerful and all these things. But really, they're often morbidly afraid of being seen and intimacy, because they might be rejected.
Yeah.
And it's like, then I might need someone other than myself, and I can only count on myself.
Yeah, lots of trauma, lots of childhood trauma there. Yeah. Yeah, it is. There's so much pain in that, having, you know, a lot of those come from childhood unmet needs. But all, like, even, you know, a person who identifies as a dismissive avoidant style, you know, that is just one part of them. It may be the dominant part right now, mm-hmm. or the self-protective part, but all of that's malleable. Exactly. All that's malleable. And I believe that we grow the most within relationships. Mm-hmm. So being able to have a deep, vulnerable conversation with your partner, sharing how you feel, naming an emotion, empathizing with how your partner feels, talking about emotions, just opening that pathway, like that can slowly start to soften that mm-hmm. icy wall that has served a purpose in a very neglectful or painful childhood. And so now with a safe partner, you can start to open up and, you know, both people really have to want to grow and grow together. And, you know, we're co-creating intimacy, we're co-creating comfort, we're co-creating connection. So, mm-hmm. you know, thinking of your, I like to use the term the couple bubble. Mm-hmm. So however many people are involved, there's a couple bubble, and a couple bubble can be weak. It can be thin, like a bubble, and can get popped. And over time, you know, that can lead to things like infidelity or relational traumas or numbing behaviors. And then if your couple bubble is really strong through emotional intimacy and sexual intimacy, then you can feel like a shield of steel and metal around you and your partner. No matter if you're miles apart, you can have a really strong couple bubble. Mm-hmm. And it does take tending to. It takes, you know, becoming aware of, you know, maybe what makes you pull away and feel unsafe. And then in that moment, not just staying silent or using the silent treatment or walking away. You know, a lot of times we use the silent treatment or Gottman's, we say stonewall, and not speak or emotionally withdraw because we might fear saying the wrong thing and making it worse.
Yeah,
and then our partner gets angry and yells at us just like an alcoholic parent did and screamed at us. And we never knew how to stop that feeling of helplessness and all that fear growing up. So all that comes up. So you could talk to your partner and be like, hey, like, sometimes I don't know what to say and I feel inadequate as your partner. And it brings so much joy to me when I see a smile on your face. But, you know, sometimes I don't know what to say or I feel like I may say the wrong thing. And that saying that is much more vulnerable than just not speaking and walking out of the room. So, which is progress. It's progress to able to say.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we think like even a difficult conversation where maybe one or both are crying or, you know, that is a fail. And I just want to say, as someone who is a deep connector, who is a demisexual like you are, who is sabiosexual, and connection is like my fuel. It's how I feel. Like the fastest way to get me aroused is to make me feel safe to be completely emotional and feel my feelings. Like mm-hmm. I've got big feelings, and if I'm allowed to just express them and you're not going to take it personally, I feel so safe.
Yes.
And so even when a conversation is hard and it brings up emotion, if you can stick with that and stay in that discomfort for a little bit and get to the end of the conversation, there's such closeness that comes through that. Every single time when you don't walk away, when you don't leave the conversation, if you can do it in a non-toxic way, if you can just hold safety for each other and
stay curious.
Stay curious. That's such a good word to use. I use that too. Also, sometimes when we have conversations, you talked about the couple bubble. I talk about the conversation bubble. And so sometimes when you're exploring something and being curious about something, you can put it in this bubble and you're not making any decisions about anything. That's a whole separate conversation.
Yes. Yeah.
So like I talk about it in regards to like fantasy and desire and, you know, sexual desire. What is it that you like would like to do? What are your desires? And you can put them in this bubble, but there's no judgment about it because you're not saying this has to happen. You're just saying, this is what excites me. This is what I like. It's like, these are the kinds of foods I like. We don't have to have that for supper. But let's dream a little bit and let's talk about it. Everything you say in that bubble is really safe. And then another conversation, you can pull some things out of the bubble and be like, okay, well, let's evaluate certain things. Is that something that I'm comfortable with or that you're comfortable with? Or, you know, and you can say no to that and feel the safety of being able to say no. You might change your mind. You can always change your mind. And I think that we're taught that we have to make final decisions. Mm-hmm. You know, when you make a vow, it's for life. You know, when you make a decision about monogamy, that's what you're deciding for life. But what if you change your mind? What if you have a great foundation? What if you want more novelty in your sex life? What if you want more excitement? You're allowed to change the rules. You can't just one of you decide to change the rules, though.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yes. It has to be consensual.
Right. You have to have a conversation about it. Communicated. Has to be honest, but you can bring up these conversations in a bubble.
Yeah.
A bubble of safety where you can be curious and be like, oh, well, tell me more about that. Because again, they're not telling you, oh, you don't do this, you don't do that, you don't do this. Like, you can't take it that way. But our triggers and our insecurities often make us feel that. They often make us feel like, oh, I'm not good enough. As soon as we hear something that our partner wants more of, we take it as, oh, I don't give them enough. But that has, it has nothing to do with you. Like, you aren't them. You can't read their minds.
Right.
But again, we've been told that if you're a good partner, you can read their minds.
Yes, right. All of the societal, societal shame, societal unrealistic stereotypes. Yeah, a lot of that religious messaging sometimes we get from a conservative background too.
Yes, very much.
Yeah. And I think too, it's like when we look at breaking this cycle of sexual avoidance, like everything you're saying is so key, you know, being able to create that security first, being able to talk about emotions, being able to process anxiety with your partner that they're having without having to fix it for them, without having to take an action, without having to make it better. Just being able to say, hey, I'm going to hold you tight while you talk to me. I'm going to rub your back or, you know, scratch your head or whatever you like while you unload some of what you're going through. Whether it's about your work life or a friend or your family or even our relationship, right? And being able to be there as an emotional sounding board for each other.
Do you
like
find
you
that,
said, not taking it personally?
Yeah. Do you find that people who have perhaps not had sex for years, you know, as a couple and are coming to you, do you find that there's this level of like, just starting to talk about things that maybe you would like don't try to go have sex yet. Like, just create this idea of what you might want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of it is creating, what would an ideal sexual experience look like for each of you? You know, these are my expectations. These are my desires. These are things I'm really into. These are things that turn me on. But even before that, creating a foundation of emotional, like vulnerability and intimacy and intelligence. So like being able to, you know, talk about spending quality time together, you know, making sure that, you know, a lot of what I do in sessions is like turning towards each other. So having people, they might be sitting away from each other and like, I'll ask them to like turn towards each other and hold hands and make eye contact and support them in like communicating what they're trying to say. Cause it's so easy to go into over explaining or fact telling or, you know, not actually hear what the person said emotionally. So, you know, one person might be saying like, I feel so lonely. I feel super lonely and like on the verge of tears. And the other person, you know, may not be taking in any of that just because they're not able to read the emotions as quickly or process as quickly or
they're
recognize
feeling
that. They right. Feel like, or they're feeling something.
Oh, so
then
I'm
I'll,
not good enough. You feel lonely, but I do this and this and then we get defensive.
Yeah.
And
yeah. So kind of pop in and I'm like, you know, okay, so let's go back to the loneliness here. Do you hear, you know, when let's, you know, really go into emotional connection as that foundation for then sexual desire. Because when we look at desire, it comes from safety.
Yeah.
We can't be in fight, flight, freeze.
It's so true. Mm-hmm. It's so true. And I don't think people realize the power of that. Even in like just a sex situation, just sex for sex. You know, some people just love, they're down to fuck, you know? They just
absolutely.
They really just like that sexual experience. It gets them out of their out of their head and they can get into their body quickly. There's some people who can just switch gears like that. I'm not one of those people. But those who can, they still need to feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not just going to go have sex with some creepy dude that's available typically, right? There has to be a level of safety to begin with, even if you are up for a good time.
Like to have a no be honored, right? To have
exactly
if we're saying no or a safe word, be respected, like just the inherent level of trust.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we could keep going and going. I know you have to go because you have another call.
I have a couple clients today.
So yeah. Before you go, though, is there any last words that you would like to share with us? And also tell our listeners how they can find you if they want to possibly work with you or find out more about what you do. And I can put those links in the show notes for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I really am passionate about supporting long-term couples who are sexually frustrated or feeling sexually distant or wanting sexual connection and a strong emotional bond, really helping couples and building emotional intimacy and sexual intimacy. And emotional connection and emotional vulnerability is essentially that soil in the garden of a healthy relationship. So much can blossom from that in terms of erotic desire, a better sex life, more frequent sexual activities, diverse sexual activities, more novelty. And so I help couples break and address and really stop that cycle of avoidance, which creates loneliness, shame, guilt, those feelings of being insignificant and unwanted, and really shift into helping each other feel attracted, build that desire, help you see yourself as desirable, work through religious trauma, work through shame, guilt, and fear that comes from being raised in a purity culture or abstinence culture. A lot of times we experience misinformation from a conservative, strict upbringing that leaves us feeling so shameful about even expressing our erotic self. And I also, you know, support couples in understanding what adequate foreplay means and how to encourage pleasure versus these obligatory or to-do list experiences around sex and shift into pleasure. Like, what feels good? What feels amazing? What allows me to relax versus, oh, I should be doing this thing, right? So shifting into that embodiment. I work a lot with complex trauma. I'm a certified sex therapy informed professional. I'm a level 2 Gottman marriage specialist. I'm LGBTQIA plus affirming. I work with couples who are often in long-term marriages who struggle with sexual connection and want a fulfilling sex life. Like, you can have an awesome parenting elements and often awesome companionship elements and be best friends and, you know, run a business together, build a career together. And you can also express yourselves and have a fulfilling, satisfying, pleasurable, and magical erotic connection and sex life, as well as being parents together and as well as paying a mortgage together. Like, you can have both and you deserve to have both. And I would love to help you have both the companionship element and the sexual element that's positive and healthy for you. You can work with me at my website. It's wisdomwithinct.com. That's wisdomwithinct.com. And I have a podcast as well called All Things Love and Intimacy on Spotify and Apple.
Oh, very cool. Well, I will definitely put those things in the show notes for you. And yeah, I just thank you for your time. And I love what you do because it leads so well into what I do, you know, like helping people add more novelty to their sex life. Maybe they've gotten their sex life kind of figured out a little bit and now they want to add a little more spiciness to that, maybe add some other people to it, or maybe just be able to go and live out your fantasies of just dressing sexy and being out with other people that are like-minded. That's what I can, that's what I help people with, you know, kind of creating, got the roadmap for open relationships, right? And how to do that successfully, the secrets to success. And, but more than that, connecting with yourself and getting rid of shame and guilt so that you can be in a place to really grow and, be closer and feel empowered, you know, as a couple. So
yeah, absolutely. It was so wonderful to be on your podcast today. It was such a treat. I loved this conversation.
Me too. We'll have to do it again because there's so many more topics we can talk about.
I know. We talked for like 45 minutes before this and then this whole episode.
I know.
I really enjoyed it. It was like so nourishing for my soul. And it's so wonderful that you have such a sex positive mindset and all of your listeners get to hear your, you know, the portal of your consciousness and really get empowered by you as well.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. And as I always say, when it comes to sex positivity, authenticity is the key.
It is.
So go and have fun. Go experience your body and pleasure. And, you know, as one of my favorite podcasts when I started my journey, said, go give yourself an orgasm today or someone else.
I love it. Yes, there's magic in that. There's magical synergy in that.
We just don't do it enough. And again, sometimes we've been taught that we can't. So,
right. Yeah, well, get those mood boosting chemicals.
Yes. Well, have a great rest of your day. Thank you so much, Katie.
Yes. I hope you have a wonderful day too.
You too.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. I told you it was going to be an amazing episode. I am so happy that we covered this subject because I've been wanting to for a while, but I know a lot of us just have never thought of sexual avoidance. I know I've talked about avoidant attachment styles versus anxious attachment styles, and we don't really think about it presenting in our sexual relationships, but we can be sexually avoidant, and there's a reason for it. It's not your fault. There's a lot of things that can get in the way. And again, we're not taught how to make sure these things don't happen. So I hope that you got a little glimpse. I know that learning about foreplay and how for vulva owners, it's 45 to 90 minutes before you're fully engorged and really, really turned on and get the maximum pleasure from your playtime. That's important information because a lot of us female bodies beat ourselves up for not being ready sooner and feel bad asking for things or asking for people to be patient with us. It just feels like we're complaining or being a pillow princess, you know? And I just want to kind of remove that stigma for women. If it is common knowledge, then nobody should be shamed for that. Nobody. So let's just start spreading the word about that. And, you know, most penises can be ready to go in 4 to 8 minutes. Not ready to come necessarily, but just ready to enjoy pleasure. It's not necessarily painful after 8 minutes, right? So our bodies are different and we have to recognize that. And it's not a rejection if our female body is not responding in a way that you're hoping to. And I think a lot of men end up feeling rejected by that they're not doing enough. It's not personal. So I just wanted to remind you of that and give you encouragement that it's a journey. It's about balance, you know? And for most people that have a responsive desire, we need a lot more sort of interaction throughout the day, some conversations, loving touches, forehead kisses, whatever it is that is your partner's love language. Those kinds of things are very beneficial to creating a safe feeling and start that process of arousal because all of that is considered part of foreplay. So foreplay is not just sitting there and stimulating the clit. It's far from that, because I would probably want to kick you if you were doing that for 45 minutes, just saying. And probably most women would feel the same way. So just a little tip, the trick is like moving from the outer parts of the body, the farthest away from the clit, fingertips, you know, move in slowly and avoid that area for quite a while. And she will have the time to relax and get into her body without fear of needing to be turned on, because that fear itself doesn't feel safe, puts us in fight or flight, like she talked about, and then we're not getting turned on. It actually turns us off. So these are important things to know, right? And I want the best for you. I want to help you. So that is our show today, and I hope you enjoyed it. I'm debating whether I'm going to release another episode next week to kind of get us back on schedule, or if I'm going to wait 2 weeks. And again, I've been in creative mode and tax season is here, so it's likely going to be another 2 weeks. But the next one is pretty incredible. So keep your eyes peeled, your ears peeled, eyes peeled, whatever. Pay attention, and I will let you know when that's out. I love you all. Have an amazing week. Have an amazing day. And don't forget to be authentic. Mwah! Thanks for listening. Be sure to follow me on Instagram at Corinne Bedard Coaching, and you can visit my website at corinnebedard.com. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to give it a like and share it with your friends. I'd be so grateful if you could help by giving us a 5-star review on Podchaser or iTunes. Don't forget to subscribe to our mailing list to be kept up to date about upcoming episodes and exciting news. Just visit our website at breakingfreeauthentically.com and scroll down to subscribe. You can also email me anytime. I'd love to hear from you. Send your messages and questions to Corinne at corinnebedard.com. Are you a part of my Facebook community yet? Join us in Breaking Free Authentically. It's where you will find this sex-positive relationship community. I'd be thrilled to have you be a part of this community with me. All the links will be in the show notes, so don't forget to check it out. Remember, when it comes to sex positivity, authenticity is the key. Have a great week.